Good morning, friends. We are going to begin with a chant today. Lord, I am thine. And as we're singing, let's, with all our energy and all our strength and all our willpower and all our might, call out to the divine, Lord, I am thine, be thou mine, bringing all of our energy, our willingness, our love, and our devotion to the divine. Begin this morning with a prayer. Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, and our beloved Guru, Paramhansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, Friend and guide, Swami Kriyananda. Humbly we bow at thy feet. Divine Mother, awaken our hearts. that we may feel your exhaustless love, your exhaustless bliss, ever flowing through us, expanding us outward until we meet infinity. Help us to know thy love, to share thy love with all. Om. Peace. Amen. I was joking with my friend Keshava, who has been filming me. Last week, I called the title of the talk Center Everywhere, and he joked with me and he said, Circumference Nowhere? And I thought about it for a moment and I said, no, just Center Everywhere. And we laughed a little and he said, maybe next week will be Circumference Nowhere. And I came to him last night when we were doing another project and I said, you know what? I think tomorrow's talk is Circumference Nowhere. And though the two don't actually have anything directly to do with one another, the essence of Sanatana Dharma is the thread that pulls through everything we talk about. So I'm sure they'll echo one another. But this week, I wanted to talk about expansion and the joy that comes from recognizing and owning who we are and what our true reality actually is, which of course is Christ consciousness, cosmic consciousness. And the great gift we have in the gurus of this particular line, who we have prayed to, who we prayed to just moments ago, and who are always guiding each step on our path and acting as channels of that divine light that is ours to own and to claim. I had the great benefit a few days ago of, I'm working on a project with a few other people where we needed to pull out stories from the autobiography of a yogi. And I took a day last week and just spent the entire day from about 8 a.m. until 11 or 12 at night. And I just read the autobiography of a yogi. I said to someone, I read the whole text. And they said, the whole text? And I said, well, you know, I skipped a few chapters in there. But nonetheless, I spent about 14 hours with Master just reading the AY, listening to Swami, reading it on the audiobook. I would be listening to a chapter as I was putzing around the house, cleaning up, and then I'd stop and I would, this is a skill that I read in the biography, the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. He used to copy texts that he enjoyed because he felt like the act of putting pen to paper really solidified the knowledge. So he would spend hours recopying texts. And I'm also that way. My brain really solidifies things when I start to write them down. So I would take a break and I would just take a chapter and start copying it down in my journal and writing out those words and reading it and just spending the whole day talking with the masters, reading from the AY, and it ended up being one of the most powerful retreat days that I've ever had, really, more than some of these longer seclusions that I've taken, because there were no other distractions, and you're right there in that energy and that vibration all day long. And one of the lines that I was telling my friend last night I'd forgotten about until I reread it is when Swami Sri Yukteswar is at the Kumbh Mela and he meets Babaji, though he doesn't know that it's Babaji. Babaji has disguised himself from Sri Yukteswar. And Yukteswar is sort of looking around at the chaos of the festivities. The Kumbh Mela is a spiritual festival, spiritual festivals that happen in India. And he's looking around, sort of looking down on all of the chaos that's happening. And he's saying it's nothing but, I'm forgetting what the first word is, but the second word is beggars. And just really seeing the lower vibration amidst all of it. And then here comes this this saint who has disguised himself and is speaking to him, and Babaji in disguise asks him, are you enjoying the Kumbh Mela? And he says, essentially, no. And Babaji responds to him, this world is of mixed character. And then I'm going to paraphrase because I'm not going to pull it directly. So forgive me, Babaji, for paraphrasing your great words. But he essentially goes on to say, this world is a mixture of sand and sugar. And he advises Sri Yukteswar to be like the ant and pull the grains of sugar and leaving the grains of sand. And it was such a perfect image because the subtlety of that sand and sugar being mixed together. And when they're mixed in, if I were to take a bucket of sand and just a couple tablespoons of sugar and mix them all up into that, you wouldn't even find the sugar. You couldn't even pick them out with your eyes. Even if I did equal amounts of sugar and sand, you wouldn't be able to find them. Unless you're like the ant, looking very keenly, perceptively, tuned in. I don't actually know the science of how ants find all of the things that they find, but I'm sure it has something to do with little incisors and vibrations and all kinds of things. I'm sure it's not just their eyes that they're grasping onto. And that's what each of us need. We can't just use our senses, our eyes, our ears, our mouth, our nose. We really have to tune into those vibrations of the sugar, of course, metaphorically being those spiritual truths that are always dropped around us everywhere. This world is of mixed character. And that's not just in the people that we're meeting, it's in everything. We live in a dualistic reality. The moment that this material world was manifested, duality was entangled into it. And our job is to find the sugar amidst the sand and to use the practices and the techniques and our meditations and our attunement to find those grains of sand and pluck them out, casting everything else aside. And I was thinking about what that looks like and how subtle it is. And I have two friends who right now are going through the midst of that, either with themselves or in their family, of people who are very sick, people who are really struggling right now. We are in a global pandemic, not with anything related to the global pandemic, but of course that adding all of this pressure to it because now there's this added reality and added fear. But people who are really very, very sick and struggling mentally, emotionally, physically. And I was talking with one of my friends on a drive home the other day, and she was talking about the blessing that she can see underneath it, that her family, the family is coming together. The family is really opening their hearts to one another. And in the midst of that struggle, really just bonding in a way that is so beautiful and that is so much deeper than the superficial bonds of love that happen, or that familial, the bonds of familial warmth that come because we're surrounded with one another, we know each other, the safety, the comfort, the love, that when they were faced with this challenge, there's something so much deeper that's present there. And another friend who just welcomed a new family member into their life in the midst of someone who's very sick. And the joy of that, I was looking at pictures that my friend had sent me and just how sweet and beautiful this little baby is, and so much joy faced right up against that struggle and that fear and that anxiety of what's going to happen to my physical body, what's happening to my health. This is the sugar in the sand. And those are examples of, those are examples of, you know, physical ailments of the fear and the anxiety, the emotional ailments that we have, those are just as prominent and just as strong. Sometimes the physical, because it's the most tangible form, it can feel really real to us. So they work as good examples. But how many of us are struggling on so many levels, social, emotional, right now, being trapped inside or stuck inside more than we're used to being, or things not going back to the way that they used to be. You know, I'm a high school English teacher in my spare time. And one of the things that, you know, obviously high schools are making decisions about what to do with the coming school year. And my high school just made some decisions, and I was talking about it with my coworkers. And one of them just so sweetly stopped in the middle of a meeting we had the other day, and she just said, "Oh, I just wish things could be normal." And I had to stop. I didn't correct her there. I mean, I didn't say anything there, but I stopped and thought, well, what is normal? To the yogi, normal is whatever's in front of you. I gather my strength and my energy. I expand beyond whatever test is in front of me, and I meet that test with joy, with light. I look for the sugar amidst the sand, because whether you're dealing with a family member who's very sick, whether you're dealing with the struggles of the social emotional ailments of being isolated or being restricted in certain ways, whether you just want a sense of normalcy and comfort, what is comfort? What is safety? Where do we turn when we're looking for those things that will not shake us, so that we can, as Paramahansa Yogananda said, stand unshaken amidst the break of crashing worlds? How do we be like the ant and pick out the sugars, leaving aside the sand? Well, comes back to circumference nowhere. The more that we can expand beyond the particulars of the moment, beyond the ailments or the fears or the anxieties of the moment, the more we can really embrace what it means to embrace infinity, then we are able to dive more deeply into that place of faith, that place of unshaken strength, that place of knowing. And as I said to you, I spent the whole day with the Autobiography of a Yogi just about a week ago. And I was so touched. You know, I stopped reading at about 11:30 at night, and I didn't fall asleep until 2 or 3 in the morning because the energy was just so intense of being in that vibration. I was just meditating and thinking and praying with the masters, because what I felt more than anything, story after story after story that I read, was the intensity of the love that the masters feel for us, who of course are channels of the love of Divine Mother, the love of God for each one of us. They're examples and channels of that love. But story after story of what it means to expand our own hearts, to be able to receive that love. And I wanted to share a few of those stories here to inspire each one of us to continue to carry that out, whatever our emotional or physical ailment, whatever the fear, the anger, the frustration is in the moment, whatever that sand is that is mixed in among the sugar. When we look at it, it looks like it's all just sand, but the sugar is there. Those spiritual qualities are there, those spiritual moments, not qualities or moments, that inspiration and that consciousness of the divine, that spark of true love, of safety, of comfort, of perfection, it's always there. If all we see is sand, it's still there. It's just mixed in, and our job is to attune ourselves and refine our consciousness to the place of being able to recognize it, just like that little ant can do. You know, in the first story, or if I just went down the list of masters, if we begin with Christ, you know, Jesus Christ says to us in the Bible, or it's said of him, that to them that could receive him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. There's our receptivity, our ability to expand, circumference nowhere. And I was thinking about the stories of Yogananda from the AY, who is healed by Sri Yukteswar, Lahiri Mahashaya, when he's very sick as a young boy, and his mother holds the image up and says to him, bow mentally to the image of our guru. And he bows down to the image of his mother's guru, and immediately he's engulfed in white light and healed. And later in the story, I'm forgetting the name of the disciple, but the disciple asks for a photograph of Lahiri, and he offers it to him, sort of again saying, why do you need this photograph? And he's saying, I just want it. And he says, this photograph will protect you if you believe that it will. And later there's, I believe it was a strike of lightning or an electrical cord, something that was very dangerous. And he takes the picture and holds the picture up, and the picture protects him. I read that and I thought, why isn't it that each one of us is carrying around a picture of Lahiri with us everywhere we go? This example after example of being protected and held in that love. Of course, Yogananda, when Swami Kriyananda first meets him, he says, I give you my unconditional love. Can you imagine if those are the first words that you're hearing, or one of the first words you're hearing from your guru? And later on, we know that after his death, his disciple hears, to them who think me near, I will be near, that he's always with us if we can attune ourselves to that vibration. Last night, my friend Keshava was giving a class, his third class in his astrology series, and he was sharing the story of Sachi and the three sapphires, and how Sri Yukteswar warns little Sachi that he needs to protect himself and change his ways. And he says, no, you're my guru, you'll protect me. And ultimately, of course, the inevitable comes, and he lays these sapphires that Sri Yukteswar had told him to get at his feet, begging his guru to save him. Later, when he is meditating and praying to his guru, there is Sri Yukteswar. He appears to him, and Sachi is healed. These masters are always with us if we're willing to open ourselves to them, no matter what ailment, physical, mental, emotional, whatever it may be. It's right there for us. All we need to do is dive more deeply into that consciousness, is dive more deeply into that knowing. And the way that we dive more deeply is through our techniques, through our kriya, through our Hong Sa technique, through meditation, to expand infinitely larger, until these little things just seem like a speck. You know, if I'm in the middle of a crisis, and this is true for me, or I'll tell a personal story rather than a metaphor of it. When I moved to Palo Alto, it was about 11 years ago, and I was working at a school in Southern California. I just finished my first year of teaching, and this was during the time of the first recession, the 2008 recession that we had. So I was hired at a school, and then at the end of this school year, I was pink slipped because I was an untenured teacher. And my principal said to me, "Don't worry, we want you back. We just have to wait for the grant to come back in because we need the government funds to hire back all our new teachers." So I said, "Great." And I went off and I had a fun summer and I just waited to be rehired. And 3 days before the school year was supposed to start, which thankfully was a little bit earlier than most school years started, my principal called me and she said, "We didn't get the grant, which means we don't have any money. We can't hire any of you back." There were about 8 of us. And so I just stopped, and this was before I had come to Ananda or knew anything about these teachings or this path, and I started to panic and think, what can I do? And I started putting energy out and just applying to jobs anywhere. I wasn't hearing back from anyone. And then this little school up in Redwood City in the Sequoia Union High School District called and said, "Hey, we'd like to offer you an interview." I thought I was going all the way up to Humboldt County because I read Sequoia and thought I was going all the way north. I had no idea, and I just showed up here to the Palo Alto area. I had an interview. The next day, I thought there was no way that I got the job because this school was such a great school. So I actually already started driving home. About halfway through my drive, so about three hours in, the principal called and said, "We'd like to offer you the job, but we need you to sign some paperwork." And he said to me, "You're already on the road, aren't you?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "You'll need to turn around." So I turned around and came back. And because it was so late, he said to me, "We need you here in 2 days." So I didn't have a place to live. I moved into this little hotel, which is actually right on the corner of the community. And so I lived in this little motel for about a month and a half, or a little less than that, until I found a place to live. And I just showed up here. In the midst of that, all of that felt like one thing after another that was just either going wrong or causing more anxiety. The whole thing was just a fit after fit after fit. And in the moment, it was like this big, right? That's what they say, when you're really close up to something and I'm looking at a dark spot, all I can see is that spot. I can't see anything else around it. But now, 10 years later, I know exactly what everything in that moment was. It was my guru bringing me here. If I hadn't come here, maybe I would have never found Ananda, or it would have taken me another 10 lifetimes to find my guru and to come back to him. And so now, with all of that perspective, when I can expand out, I can see the sugar amidst the sand. I can see each moment when my guru would say, "You know what? No, I'm not going to give you a place to live because I want you to live right here, 2 feet away from the Ananda community. You maybe you don't see it yet, but it's right there. I want you to feel it." Or, "You know what? No, I don't want you to be staying down in Southern California. So I'm going to just close that door and bring you up north." All of these things that felt like one tragedy or one tragedy is too big a word, one hiccup after another. Now with perspective, I can see the sugar amidst all of it. I can see my guru, just like Sachi seeing a vision of his guru, just like Yogananda coming to each one of us, saying to them who think me near, I will be near. Just like Swami Kriyananda, who when one of my friends asked, "Will you be with us even when you're gone?" And he says, "I hope so." And she realized that what that means is, if we can attune ourselves to him, we can expand beyond our ego consciousness. If we can expand to that infinite capacity to love, if we can expand into infinity, that's what I want to say, and really feel the love of Divine Mother, circumference nowhere, center everywhere, circumference nowhere, expanding out into that joy, into that light, into that love, what we see is that little Just like that little ant, we can pick each grain of sugar and keep them in our pocket. And of course we know, because Swami Kriyananda has told us, at the end of all of our lives, when we're scanning back through everything that we've done, what are the moments that we hold on to? The only moments that matter are the moments that we have touched into the divine, the moments that we picked up that piece of sugar and put it in our pocket, put it maybe in our mouths and tasted it and savored it and held it and loved it with all of our hearts and all of our devotion, because those are the moments that matter. Everything else is the whirlpool of energy that's bringing us to that moment. Everything that happened in that whirlwind of 4 days that brought me up to Northern California brought me right here to this moment, where I can be sitting next to the pictures of my gurus, my teachers, and speaking with all of you and sharing with all of you this divine inspiration. What else do we want to be doing with our lives? So no matter what it looks like, whether it's vast deserts or just a little pail of sand, the sugar is there. Taste it, savor it, hold on to it. Always call out for the divine, and they are there protecting us.